sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Rabbi Leon Morris, president of Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. I saw a fun item on Facebook this week, if it's possible to have fun with pandemics. It read, "I don't know what Jewish holiday it is now. We walk around in slippers like it's Tisha B'Av. We wear masks like it's Purim. We eat outside like it's Sukkot. We eat fruits like it's Tu B'Shvat. We walk around with cleaning wipes like it's Pesach. We eat every meal with our families and sleep in like it's Shabbos. So what Jewish holiday is this, and when does it end? Because I'm ready for Havdalah." I think we are all ready for Havdalah roundabout now for this COVID-19 stuff. But I also think the pandemic of coronavirus is not going away anytime soon. Which brings me to a very strange source for inspiration during this depressing pandemic right now.
Nibbling on sponge cake, watching the sun bake, all of those tourists covered with oil.
That's right, it's that old parrot head, Jimmy Buffett, king of soft rock, jangly island music, most relaxed person to ever become an industry icon, and definitely not Jewish. Jimmy Buffett was being interviewed on a somewhat obscure but often entertaining podcast called My Brother, My Brother, and Me by three brothers named McElroy. Apparently, they are good friends with Jimmy Buffett and have had him on their show many times and gone to his concerts and been backstage and done all that fun stuff. Anyway, they're interviewing the hero of A Pirate Looks at 40 and A Parrot Looks at 50 and songs like Changes in Latitude and, of course, the inspiration for the whole Margaritaville restaurant chain, which made him very rich, I'm sure. On the surface, Jimmy Buffett does not seem like a great place to find solid advice on how to survive and turn this coronavirus lock-in into something beneficial.
Drumming my six string on my front porch swing, smell of shrimp there beginning to boil, wasting away again in Margaritaville, searching for my lost sugar salt.
But then they asked him about how he was surviving the pandemic, and this came out of good old Jimmy's mouth. "So I've got this beautiful jazz guitar, and, you know, I'm not a very jazz player, but I love listening to it. So I started playing a little, looking for some little augmented seconds and chords as I was writing, and I had this guitar. I'm doing like an hour a day of just playing guitar and also an hour a day of learning French. Because, you know, I speak fairly good French, but this is a good time to work on it. I'm doing better now because I'm doing it a lot. I go up on a podcast and talk to people, and I'm reading The Little Prince in French." And after some more banter, they asked if he was doing anything else besides learning jazz guitar and working on his conversational French. And Jimmy Buffett said, "Well, you know, keep a little bit busy, but do something, you know, like reading. To me, if you start there and you read good books, and if you're not a reader, start reading, because it can take you there. It really can. We all know great writers read and listen. I start first reading. Basic. Oh, and then if you've got room, a ping pong table."
Some people claim that there's a woman to blame, but I know it's my own damn fault.
I've been to a couple of Jimmy Buffett concerts years ago, and they were really fun, even if all the songs agreeably sound kind of the same. But I don't think anyone in that whole crowd at either of the concerts I went to was thinking about reading great books or speaking French or playing jazz guitar. But by golly, Jimmy Buffett is right. How many of you have used this strange, isolating time to make yourself better in a meaningful way? How many of you have seen this as an opportunity to do more than rearrange your closets or binge on every reasonably good Netflix show or Facebook message people you haven't seen in 20 years or just get better at a video game? I personally have an okay excuse for not having accomplished more during this pandemic. I had a major operation and I've been healing and rehabilitating a rebuilt spine, having had 3 vertebrae fused back in early June. Still, Jimmy Buffett's words struck home a bit. Why haven't I taken advantage of this lull in life to learn a new language, or read the 20 or so books stacked next to my bed, or train my cat to fetch coffee for me? No, really, he's right. It's actually kind of a Jewish message, to tell the truth. What is it that Pirkei Avot tells us? Lo alecha hamlacha ligmor v'lo ata ben charin lehibatel mimena. It's not your job to finish the work, but you're not free to desist from it either. We learn from many people. Who knew that Jimmy Buffett could be a pretty good rabbi in a time of pandemic? We do have another good piece of news, and it's actually quite remarkable. We were notified by our podcast provider we have now reached 100,000 downloads of Too Jewish. That's amazing, since we never really do PR for our show, which is about to celebrate its 18th anniversary next week. But 100,000 downloads of Too Jewish, not counting those of you who are listening live on radio, or those of you who go to our website and just stream the show, that's pretty fabulous, and we are grateful for your listenership and your continuing support of Too Jewish. Toda rabah. And so to play us in this morning, here's a Shehechianu, a prayer for all good new things, in a pretty setting by Susan Collins. That was Shehechianu, the prayer for all good and new things. When we return in a moment on to Jewish, our guest, Rabbi Leon Morris, the president of Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies, will explain how this remarkable institution works in Jerusalem, reaching out to Jews of all denominations and backgrounds for powerful and transformative Jewish learning. Find out how it all works when we return in a moment here on to Jewish.
There's magic in the air at this special place for fun. A place where fortune smiles and Tucson comes alive. This is Casino del Sol. The best games in town. Amazing dining and top-flight entertainment. This is a heart that beats with excitement, with passion and beauty. It's all waiting for you at Casino del Sol. This is the soul of Tucson. Presenting sponsor of University of Arizona Basketball. Enterprise of the Pasquayaki Tribe.
Congregation Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a new Jewish synagogue in the Catalina foothills in northwest Tucson, celebrates a great array of services, classes, and events this summer and fall. Established by passionate, caring congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha has created a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy. a new progressive congregation in northwest Tucson in the foothills. Beit Simcha is open to everyone throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Beit Simcha's synagogue is located at 2270 West Ina Road, just west of La Cholla, near the entrance to the Foothills Mall property. Services, classes, and events are open to everyone in normal times. In these days of coronavirus tsoros, join us every Friday night on our Facebook page for Shabbat evening celebration services with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, at 6:30 p.m., and Saturday morning Shabbat services at 10 a.m., also with me leading them. Our Facebook page is Beit Simcha Tucson, B-E-I-T-S-I-M-C-H-A Tucson. You don't have to be a member of Facebook to watch. And we'll hold our services with full music by virtual experience weekly for the time being. All of our Adult Education Academy classes are on Zoom, which you can access by emailing us at beitsimchatucson.org. Synagogue's located at 2270 West Ina Road, west of La Cholla, on the north side of Ina, at the entrance to the Foothills Mall property. We aren't in the mall, but on the south side in our own building. But for now, we are a fully functioning virtual congregation on Zoom and Facebook. Email me at rabbi@beitsimchatucson.org for more information. To learn about Beit Simcha, to attend services, our great religious school and Torah Tikes program, Bar and Bat Mitzvah, confirmation, and high school programs, and rich array of Adult Education Academy courses, all taught on Zoom, and of course our services on Facebook, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org, or call 520-276-5675. That's 276-5675, BeitSimchaTucson.org. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, in the newest and fastest-growing Jewish congregation in all of Southern Arizona in its exciting beginning years. We are delighted to welcome to Two Jewish our guest this morning. Rabbi Leon Morris is, I hate to say it this way, but an old friend, although he's not old. He's the president of the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem, an open, inclusive, intellectually challenging Jewish learning community with programs all around the world. Leon, tell us a little bit about Pardes, how it came to be, and why it's unique.
Sure. Thank you, Sam. It's great to speak with you. I think we're supposed to say that we're friends of long standing.
That's
now.
Much better. We could say we were classmates, but you know that.
Exactly.
Which is true. So tell us about Pardes a bit.
Sure. So Pardes was started in 1972. And at the time, it was a revolutionary idea that anyone, regardless of gender, regardless of what denomination you affiliated with, regardless of your form of Jewish practice, could study classic Jewish texts, the kinds of texts that one studies at a yeshiva, in a Beit Midrash, in a study hall, together, and that everyone would have access to these texts and developing skills around these texts. So for almost 50 years, we have been strengthening Jewish life by promoting the study of classic Jewish texts in a way that has a lot of depth and a lot of relevance to the time that we're living in. And over the course of this study, we've cultivated hundreds and hundreds of future Jewish leaders in a diverse and inclusive environment.
So there are people from Orthodox backgrounds, conservative backgrounds, Reform backgrounds, secular backgrounds, all studying together.
Absolutely. And you walk into the central study area, the Beit Midrash, on any day at Pardes, whether it's during our year-long program or during our summer programs or our special one-week seminars, and you see the most diverse assortment of Jews of all ages, of all colors, Jews by birth, those who have chosen Judaism, people who are Orthodox, conservative, Reform, women wearing kippot, men wearing kippot, men without kippot, women with tzitzit, women with their head covered, every form of Jewish life. And what unites everyone is this common language of a love for Jewish texts. and a love for Jewish learning.
And that learning is inspired by Pardes. We'll talk much more about how Pardes works, how people get to go there, when we come back in just a moment with Leon Morris here on Too Jewish.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at TooJewishRadio18@gmail.com. That's TOOJewishRadio18@gmail. Or visit our website at TooJewishRadio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through our website, streaming us from there or downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store as very popular podcasts. Top 10 in America, according to Moment magazine, and now 100,000 strong. We welcome back a randomly occurring feature of Too Jewish, our Zen Judaism segment, Haikus for Jews, koans of wisdom about our journey. 7-foot Jews in the NBA slam dunking. My alarm clock rings. A lovely nose ring. Excuse me while I put my head in the oven. That was Zen Judaism, Haikus for Jews, two koans of wisdom on Too Jewish. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
So, in the midst of all of this COVID-19 insanity and the ongoing protests and all the other things we have to worry about, as Jews, we have some other concerns, and some of it is right here at home.
So, first of all, I read a statistic, interestingly, from the Anti-Defamation League, showing that in the calendar year 2019, there were more anti-Semitic incidents in the U.S. than in any year since the early 40s. So some objective count shows that this is on the upswing, and it's been on the upswing for at least a couple of years. And 2020 is poised to look even worse because there are people who blame Jews for the COVID-19 epidemic, pandemic, whatever you want to call it.
I thought it was caused by 5G. You know, right. There you go.
Right. I mean, there are all kinds of crazies out there, but a reflex when things are going wrong and times are tough and there's economic contraction has always been to blame the Jews. In Western Christian countries, it's just an almost timeless reflex. And recently, I was particularly bothered by the springing up downtown in Tucson along 4th Avenue and elsewhere. So not quite downtown, but basically near campus.
Right, between campus and downtown.
So there were all these signs saying the only way to make America great again is to remove the Jews from power over banking, media, and government. Well, you know, it's been a long time since any serious person believed that Jews had power over banking in this country. I don't think any serious person has ever believed that Jews have power over government in this country. And media, you know, you can argue that in the early days of Hollywood, a lot of the producers and
studio
directors,
creators,
right,
founders,
the studio system,
yeah,
they were all Jewish immigrants from Eastern and Central Europe. So there's at least a kernel of truth that one corner of the media was at one point in history dominated by Jews. But the rest of it is pure fiction, and it's classic anti-Semitic tropes. And the fact that it's surfacing with such a vengeance in Tucson, where, you know, if Jews had these magical powers anywhere, certainly not Tucson, but there they are, these signs of like 2,000-year-old slanders and libel and whatever. And you have to ask yourself Well, and I think it's two related questions. First of all, what causes so much divisiveness in American society today? So much name-calling, so much finger-pointing, so much polarization. And nobody seems to seek common ground anymore. And this epidemic of anti-Semitic signs and other anti-Semitic incidents, some of which are much more tragic than mere signs, I think points to an underlying sickness from which we will at some point have to try to heal. And we'll have to try to do that as a whole nation coming together and healing from our current divisiveness and polarization. I don't know if there's precedent for this in our country, but it is clear that by any objective standard, anti-Semitism has hit and will continue to hit new highs for a while.
I hope we can turn it around soon, speedily and soon. It has been turned around in the past in America, but just when we thought it wasn't really a factor in American society, it has reemerged with a vengeance. Thanks, Tom. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
Time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. A young Jewish woman fulfills her parents' dreams by going to medical school to become a doctor. She does her residency on a Native American reservation in northern Arizona, where she falls in love with a Navajo and elopes. Her parents, who expected her to marry a Jewish man, of course, are shocked and become estranged from her. But one day, a year or so later, she calls her parents. "Mom, Dad, I wanted to tell you we just had a baby, and we want his name to honor both of his heritages, Native American and Jewish. We decided to name him Whitefish." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week we read the second portion in the book of Deuteronomy, the remarkable Sedra of Vayetchanan. It includes truly spectacular texts, the Shema, central statement of God's oneness, Shema Yisrael, Adashem Elokeinu, Adashem Echad, Hear Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one, followed immediately by the Ve'ahavta, the commandment to love God with all of our hearts, minds, and strength. As if that were not enough honor for one Torah portion, Vayetchanan also includes the recitation of the Ten Commandments, the Aseret HaDibrot, for the second time in the Torah. If you were to rank Torah portions, you could easily put Vayetchanan near the top simply for quality of content. It is no accident this powerfully affirming portion is read the week after Tisha B'Av, the commemoration of the destruction of both the first and second temples. Vayetchanan is read on Shabbat Nachamu, the Sabbath of consolation after Tisha B'Av, for we take comfort in our knowledge that morality and holiness ultimately will bring justice. The Shema itself is a simple sentence. Listen, Israel, God is your Lord. God is only one. Wholeness, oneness. A straightforward statement, one that should be easy to both understand and accept. So simple, in fact, anyone should be able to understand it. Although, of course, simple and true ideas often struggle for acceptance. But it's the text that follows the Shema, the Ve'ahavta, that may be the more subtle and in many ways more intriguing passage. For in that prayer we are commanded to love God. Ve'ahavta et Adonai Elohecha, love the Lord your God with all your mind, soul, and heart. Many things in life can be commanded, but love is distinctly not one of them. So what does the Torah mean when it says we are commanded to love God? Love is essentially an unconditional way of giving, of focusing attention and care on another being. Loving God means paying attention to God, to God's existence in our world, to God's oneness, to God's moral code. In Judaism, we express our love of God, our ahava, by demonstrating that we've learned how to listen, shma. If we truly listen, then we will know that we must act ethically. Loving God means being obligated to listen and follow God's mitzvot, live ethical lives, and do so with energy and commitment. It also means that being good, morally good, is a form of love, perhaps the purest form. This week, may we all find ways to express that love through the righteous actions of mitzvot, and so affirm God's existence in our world. When we return on to Jewish, our guest, my friend of long standing, Rabbi Leon Morris, president of Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies, will explain how they've adjusted during the pandemic and continue to be a dynamic institution of Jewish learning. Hear all about it when we come back on Too Jewish in just a moment.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
In
a sign of these strange and difficult times, the Tenement Museum, a wonderful institution that tells the stories of Jewish and other immigrants who lived on New York City's Lower East Side, announced it's laying off its tour guides and other part-time workers, a total of 76 employees. The museum, like most cultural institutions in New York City, has no firm reopening date. In mid-March, the Tenement Museum furloughed workers, in addition to laying off or furloughing nearly all its full-time staff. A $1.4 million federal payroll loan received in April enabled the museum to bring back its full-time staff. But last week, the museum announced it would furlough its part-time workers again. In addition to tour guides or educators, the part-time workers include front desk and retail employees. The museum's president, Morris Vogel, took a 99% pay cut back in March. He's now being paid $25 a month in order to retain his health insurance. Tenement wages. "Our educators make our programs come to life," said Vogel. "They are an important part of the museum's success. We'd hope to avoid this drastic step." The museum's federal loan period ends September, but it's hoping to avoid further layoffs after by attracting visitors and schools on virtual tours and conducting outside tours of the neighborhood for single families. The interior will remain closed indefinitely. Other New York museums, like the Metropolitan Museum of Art and the Museum of Modern Art, have discussed reopening in coming months, but the Tenement Museum consists of tiny immigrant apartments from more than a century ago, conditions that make social distancing impossible. "I can tell you from personal experience, the Tenement Museum is incredible. I took my own children to see it on a trip to New York so they could understand what their great-grandparents had experienced when they came to America. It's an amazing place. I only hope that when we finally come out of this pandemic, it will return to being the remarkable resource that it is." In California, the San Francisco Giants' Gabe Kapler became the first major league manager to kneel during the national anthem, joining a number of his players in the action before a road exhibition game against the Oakland A's. The Jewish ex-Major League outfielder, a one-time coach for Team Israel, Gabe Kapler has been an outspoken backer of the Black Lives Matter movement. After the game, Kapler said, "I spoke to the group today and gave them essentially two messages. The first message was that our coaching staff and our organization would support any statement they wanted to make. If they kneeled for the anthem, we'd support that. If they stood for the anthem, we'd support that too. We wouldn't pass judgment on them for making any statement or standing up for what they believe in or expressing themselves. The second message I wanted to share was what my plans were. I did that because I wanted them to know that I wasn't pleased with the way our country has handled police brutality. I told them that I wanted to amplify their voices and amplify the voice of the Black community and marginalized communities as well," said Gabe Kapler. And last Friday, Islamic prayers were held in Istanbul's iconic Hagia Sophia for the first time since Ataturk, the founder of modern Turkey, changed its status to a museum 85 years ago. Last week, Turkey's government decided to reconvert the ancient cathedral and then a mosque and then a museum back into a mosque. Russia has come forward with Moscow voicing concern to Ankara over the fate of the historic building, including its world-famous Byzantine Christian mosaics. A spokesman for Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, who spearheaded the push to change the status of the monument from museum to mosque, said that Christian mosaics would be concealed with curtains or lighting during Friday prayers. Within days of an Istanbul court revoking the Hagia Sophia's museum status, paving the way to its conversion to a mosque, Russian President Vladimir Putin was on the phone to Turkish President Erdogan seeking assurances over the state of the mosaics. Russian Orthodox leaders have also expressed concerns about the building's conversion, which they describe as a threat to Christianity. The 6th century Byzantine cathedral is not only famous as an architectural marvel, but for the huge mosaics depicting Jesus, the Virgin Mary, and the rulers of Byzantium decorating the building's massive walls and ceilings. When the Hagia Sophia, then the largest and greatest church in the world, was converted to a mosque in 1453 after the Ottoman conquest of Constantinople by Sultan Mehmed the Conqueror, the mosaics were plastered over to comply with Muslim doctrine, banning figurative representations in places of worship. The mosaics were revealed when the Hagia Sophia was turned into a museum in 1934 by Mustafa Kemal Atatürk, the founder of the Turkish Secular Modern Republic. Ankara has been quick to quell growing concern by offering assurances on the future of Hagia Sophia's artwork. It's out of the question these mosaics would be covered, plastered over, or kept from the public, said presidential spokesperson Ibrahim Kalin. Hagia Sophia, or Hagia Sophia, is an amazing structure, one of my favorite places to visit in the world, to be honest. I don't think the practical Turks would convert it back into a mosque without weighing the huge amount of tourism it currently attracts. By the way, the famous Blue Mosque, a huge and magnificent 400-year-old mosque and tourist attraction itself, stands 5 minutes' walk from Hagia Sophia. There are no shortages of mosques in Istanbul already. Opinion polls in Turkey indicate that Erdogan's party, the AKP, is hemorrhaging support. Analysts say Hagia Sophia's conversion is widely seen as an attempt by Erdogan to galvanize his religious and nationalist base. In recent years, Erdogan has made statements and taken actions that have damaged the good relationship Turkey has long had with Israel, continuing to move Turkey's status as a secular state towards more Islamism cannot help at all. And in news from Israel that should come as absolutely no surprise to any regular Two Jewish listener, rumors are circulating in Israel that Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu plans to call for new elections this fall, preventing him handing power over to Kahol Lavan, the Blue-White Party, and its leader, Benny Gantz. And the beat in Israel goes on and on. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews Around the World. We are delighted to welcome back the Two Jewish our guest this morning, Rabbi Leon Morris, who's the president of Pardes, a fascinating Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem, diverse, Klal Yisrael spread across all Jewish denominations. Leon made Aliyah to Israel. I should note, in the interest of full disclosure, that we've been friends of long standing. I think I've got that right now. We were classmates together in Israel long ago. He came to Pardes from the Sholom Hartman Institute, where he was the vice president for North American programs in Israel. He's been on the faculty of Hebrew Union College Jewish Institute of Religion and was the rabbi of Temple Adas Israel in Sag Harbor, New York. He's the founding director of the Skirball Center for Adult Jewish Learning at Temple Emmanuel in Manhattan and was a Wexner graduate fellow at Hebrew Union College and has many other accolades that we could throw at him. In the meantime, when you came to Pardes, you were, I think, the first alumnus ever to take over, to helm the institution. Was that an advantage, do you think?
It definitely was. Pardes, along with some other institutions like Hebrew Union College, which you and I shared, Pardes was always one of my spiritual and intellectual homes. I was a student there exactly 25 years ago, and for the year program, and I had studied in the summer program 26 years ago, 27 years ago, and I always felt like environments like Pardes that welcome Jews of all perspectives were the most exciting environments that I wanted to be a part of. This is why I loved Hillel so much in college. This is why I love the Limud movement, Limud in all of these cities across North America and the world. And Pardes is a place like that. I love to sit with people who don't think about the world the way I do and to have the opportunity to learn from each other.
How does somebody start learning at Pardes? What are the requirements? Is there an age limitation? How does it work?
Pardes has a number of different programs. We have several nine-month programs, almost year-long programs. One is the general program, which for lack of a better name, maybe I should say, wearing my development hat for lack of a major donor, we call the year program. No hints
there, by the way.
Absolutely not. This is a post-college program. And some of our students come directly after college. Some come several years after college. And some come at later stages of life. So the majority of our students in the year program are in their mid to late 20s. And they come to Pardes before going on to law school or medical school or other kinds of graduate school or rabbinical school or cantorial school. But we always have students who are making a transition in career, taking a sabbatical. So that's the year program. We have concurrently a program for future day school Jewish studies educators that they spend 2 years at Pardes, and they're awarded a master's degree together with our partners at Hebrew College in Boston. And after their 2 years at Pardes, they have a commitment of at least 3 years teaching in a day school in North America. And we have a one-year program for experiential Jewish educators. This is what used to be called informal Jewish education. These are folks who will teach in youth movements, in summer camps, in supplementary educational programs. So together, those three programs form the basis of our September through May program. Our largest program of the year are our summer sessions. We're in the midst of one right now. It's full, so I won't do a big pitch for it on your show.
How many people is full, by the way?
We wanted, it's online, of course, this year with the pandemic. But I think we capped it at about 200 students because the classes, we just like in a face-to-face class, we want the teachers and the students to have opportunities for real exchange. And the morning classes of the summer program are geared toward skill building. And so there kind of has to be a limit in teaching and imparting skills, skills in reading, reading Tanakh, reading the Hebrew Bible, and reading Talmud, and reading Mishnah. And then we have, which some of your listeners might be interested in, we have several times a year a five-day executive learning seminar, which is a kind of five-day immersive Pardes experience that is it includes classes and meals and special speakers. This past summer, just a few weeks ago, we did it online for the first time. We hope to resume those programs in Jerusalem as soon as we can. And in addition, there are visiting groups that come to Pardes. We have a program that many congregations have implemented that lifts up the value of constructive disagreement, how to disagree the Beit Midrash way. Hmm. And it's called Machloket Matters. Machloket, as you know, is a disagreement. And it's this program is founded on the idea of disagreements for the sake of heaven, Machloket L'Shem Shemayim. And we're really trying to share with the American Jewish community at a time where we felt it's desperately needed the value of constructive disagreement. And so this is a study series, a curriculum that individual congregations and JCCs are implementing. And we're starting to do more and more in North America, particularly with the pandemic. That process has been speeded up, but we have increasing numbers of online classes right now and online seminars. And finally, I'll just say that we, for years, have been producing a number of podcasts through our online learning portal, which we call Elmad. And we have podcasts ranging from 10 minutes of Torah to a half-hour podcast each week on the Torah portion of the week, on Parshat HaShavua, and another one on Jewish history. And many of our public programs we also record and make available as podcasts on our website.
It's a broad
interesting, diverse set of programs, and so many things now, of course, are available online. It's remarkable how much you can get that way. A different kind of question. When you came to Pardes, about 3 years ago, what surprised you the most coming back?
I think how much Pardes had grown. When I was at Pardes, it was basically this year-long program that I described and a summer program, and I had experienced both. But in the intervening years, these additional programs, like this program for day school educators, like the program for experiential educators, and then the whole distance learning piece of all of these podcasts, all of this was new. And I hadn't really kept track of Pardes's growth in all of those years. We've added to that now by launching a very ambitious program for North America. We have about 6,000 alumni of Pardes, almost all of whom live in the United States and Canada. Of those alumni, about 1,100 of them are rabbis and cantors and Jewish educators and Hillel professionals. And we realized over the last few years that this is a tremendous resource that we've underused. We've underutilized them, not to promote Pardes. I mean, that also would be fine, but we've underutilized them to really help them transform American Jewish life to be more centered on Jewish learning and Jewish learning across difference. And that's what we're starting to build out now. We're starting to build out networks and programs where our alumni and their family and their friends continue their own learning and promote the centrality of Jewish learning across difference, of Jewish learning as one of the central ways in which Jews embrace their Judaism. I like to use this phrase, this very inelegant phrase, that what we're really striving for at Pardes, that's bigger than Pardes, our big vision for Jewish life in North America, is what I call the Beit Midrashification of Jewish life. Let's turn all of Jewish life into a big study hall, a Beit Midrash, where we're all engaged in talking about these texts, but it doesn't require any kind of ideological agreement. You can love the text. You can be infuriated by the text. You can be confused by the text. And you're sitting across the table from somebody who looks at the world differently than you. And you're having a conversation. You're having a debate. And ultimately, we're using these texts as a key to unlocking the secrets of what it means to be a human being in the 21st century and what it means to be a Jew in the 21st century. And I've always had this sense that of all the classic institutions of Jewish life, the Beit Midrash, the study hall, is the one that's most compatible with the vast majority of American Jews. We love debate. We love reading. We love discussing. We love conversation. And so the Beit Midrash provides all of that to us. And it says this act of studying and debating and arguing is one of the most sacred acts that we can be engaged in.
It's such a beautiful explanation of what Torah really means. I also, you know, I'm reminded of the fact that, as you note, this is the Beit Midrash is probably the thing that speaks most directly to North American Jews. It's probably why the first synagogue was founded, you know, 2,300 years ago. In Delos, it was probably a Beit Midrash.
I think that what probably happened in America was that in order to fit into a religious paradigm that already existed here of largely Catholics, Protestants, and then Jews, we needed to emphasize the prayer elements of Jewish life, but less emphasis was placed on the study, the learning element. I'm all for prayer. I love prayer. I realize I'm speaking now with a congregational rabbi.
Not to mention that you're one of the editors of the High Holiday Machzor for the Reform Movement, so prayer is kind of central to who you are, too.
I do love prayer, but I think that there is there's a power that to me feels untapped with the study hall, with the Beit Midrash. And I've, for a long time, have had a sense that if more Jews could experience Jewish learning that takes place in this way with other people, with good teachers, that this could be a real way to deepen their own connection to Jewish life, to Jewish wisdom, to Jewish history. And so I feel grateful to be in an environment like Pardes, which has always been so resonant with that idea of Jewish life.
A last quick question. Is there a requirement? Do people have to know Hebrew? What do they have to have, kids or not even kids, people that want to study at Pardes? How much background do they need?
Right. It's a great question. Our students range from people that have not yet had the opportunity to learn the Aleph-Bet to people who have studied Talmud for years and years. And that's another part of the diversity here, that you're creating a community of learners where everybody knows different things. Some people come to Pardes with vast life experience, but almost no Jewish knowledge. Many students, I think, come having a little bit of Jewish knowledge and feeling for a long time as if they knew there was more to it than what they were taught as children. And some people coming in with great knowledge. So we have lots of different levels. We're able to accommodate every level. And I think everybody just feels supported wherever they're at in their own journey of Jewish learning and in their own process of using these texts and the experience of the community that we build together to figure out, how do they want to live this Torah? How do they want to live this Jewish learning that they're experiencing at Pardes? And we lift up and celebrate all of the different ways that people live the Torah that they study at Pardes.
I want to thank Rabbi Leon Morris for a wonderful visit here on Too Jewish. People can go to pardes.org, pardes.org, to get much more information about Pardes. Leon, thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Rabbi Sam Kohan. I just want to correct the URL. It's pardes.org.il.
Oh, right. Sorry, Israel, right. Pardes.org.il. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
I love this reunion, and I love this opportunity to rekindle our connection as well.
Me too. When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
There's magic in the air at this special place for fun, a place where fortune smiles and Tucson comes alive. This is Casino del Sol, the best games in town, amazing dining and top-flight entertainment. This is a heart that beats with excitement, with passion and beauty. It's all waiting for you at Casino del Sol. This is the soul of Tucson. Presenting sponsor of University of Arizona Basketball, Enterprise of the Pascua-Yaqui Tribe.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Our playout this morning comes from HaProject Revivo, the Revivo Project, an Israeli group covering old songs. In this case, Ofra Chaza's classic song, Tefillah. You, God, who are above us, grant the wishes of our hearts, watch over us like children. Join us next Sunday for the 18th anniversary show of Too Jewish. Our guest will be another friend of long standing, Rabbi Jenny Rosen, founder and CEO of a new organization, Dayenu, a Jewish call to climate action. My friends, may you have a healthy week. God willing, a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
אי שם במרומים הוא הרופא כל חולים הוא הנותן רוב שמחה לילדים הוא עושה משפטים
הוא בשמיים והוא היחיד הוא הגדול הנורא הוא השומר עלינו מצרה
אלוה שמור עלינו כמו ילדים שמור נא ואל תעזור תן לנו אור ושמחת נעורים תן לנו כוח עוד ועוד
שמור נא עלינו כמו ילדים שמור נא ואל תעזור תן לנו אור ושמחת נעורים תן לנו גם לאהוב מה כבר נותר לנו עוד בימים מה כבר נותר כל היום שמש תקווה והמון מבטים לילה ויום של חלום
הוא בשמיים והוא היחיד הוא הגדול הנורא הוא השומר עלינו מצרה
אלוה שמור עלינו כמו ילדים שמור נא ואל תעזור תן לנו אור ושמחת נעורים תן לנו כוח עוד ועוד
שמור עלינו כמו ילדים שמור נא ואל תן לנו אור ושמחת נעורים תן לנו גם
כמו ילדים שמור לה ואל תעזור
תן לנו אור ושמחת נעורים תן לנו כוח עוד באור
שמור עלינו כמו ילדים שמור לה ואל תעזור
תן לנו אור ושמחת נעורים תן לנו גם לאהוב יושב לו אי שם במרומים הוא הרופא כל חולים הוא הנותן רוב שמחה לילדים הוא עושה משפטים
הוא בשמיים והוא היחיד הוא הגדול הנורא הוא השומר עלינו מצרה
אלוה שמור עלינו כמו ילדים שמור נא ואל תעזור תן לנו אור ושמחת נעורים תן לנו כוח עוד ועוד
שמור נא עלינו כמו ילדים שמור נא ואל תעזור תן לנו אור ושמחת נעורים תן לנו גם לאהוב נותר לנו עוד בימים מה כבר נותר כל היום שמש תקווה והמון מבטים לילה ויום של חלום
הוא בשמיים והוא היחיד הוא הגדול הנורא הוא השומר עלינו מצרה
אלוה שמור עלינו כמו ילדים שמור נא ואל תעזור תן לנו אור ושמחת נעורים תן לנו כוח עוד ועוד
שמור עלינו כמו
כמו ילדים שמור נא ואל תעזור תן לנו בשמחת נעורים תן לנו גם כמו ילדים שמור לה ואל תעזוב תן לנו אור בשמחת נעורים.
Sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.